I'm joined here today by Cathy Marcus, Global Chief Operating Officer for Prudential Real Estate Investors, Sherry Santos-Wiest, Principal Investment Officer for Real Estate at the Connecticut State Retirement and Trust Funds, and Sean Ruman, Director of Real Assets Research at NEPC. Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
In trying to get to the heart of investing in US core real estate, I would love to get your thoughts as to what are some of the best structures for investors to actually execute on this strategy. It could be through either open-ended funds, separate accounts directly, joint ventures, dare I even say it, REIT investments. Sean, kick us off here. Open-ended funds do seem to be the choice, the vehicle of choice for most investors. What are you actually seeing? Are you seeing a shift away from open-ended into perhaps more direct JVs, perhaps even REITs? Give me your sense.
I would say for the vast majority of our clients, they access core real estate through open-end core funds primarily. Secondarily, and this is a little bit newer, would be REITs. Less so separate accounts or direct investments, but that's partially for a lot of groups a size issue. You know, if you're going to make a $20 million commitment to core real estate and you're thinking about doing it through a direct investment, that really limits you to what you can do. And we think that changes the risk-return profile of kind of what you're trying to achieve.
There must be huge issues in terms of, and I think we'll get onto this, in terms of diversification and trying to get scale and things like that. Sherry, you're the investor here. How have you accessed core real estate? What's been the best for you?
We execute our core strategy either through investing in open-ended core funds, and the other is through separate accounts. Our separate account portfolio comprises of about 15 to 20% of our overall core bucket. And to that end, we are experiencing exactly what Sean had said, which is some difficulty in placing money directly into core real estate when the prices have escalated. So we're not even talking about a $20 million ticket. Our tickets are 30 to 50 million. We're having trouble placing those, even with, you know, so we almost need to place leverage on them. And that is a very competitive space. From an asset management standpoint, we're actually using our core funds, our open-ended core funds, almost as money market funds. While they are somewhat liquid with redemptions of a quarterly basis, we are able to place monies that are being held in queue for value add and opportunistic fund, newer commitments in value add and opportunistic funds within these core funds, and then shift them incrementally from the core funds as capital is drawn on new commitments.
And Sherry, you've raised a very important point in terms of, you know, the redemptions and queues in terms of open-ended funds. One of the pros of open-ended funds is the fact that it's liquid and you can get access to your money. Give me your examples.
Real estate is not liquid. Let's not fool ourselves. Not even REITs are liquid, really. Because the trading really is not as great, the volume of trading is not as great for REITs as you would think, my own experience here. However, you know, that said, open-ended core funds, while, you know, we have no illusions that they have sometimes had redemption queues during the downturn especially, but by and large, you know, with a, you know, with a stable of very well-run open-ended core funds, we've had no, you know, we've not had a lot of issues with the redemption. As I said, we've placed our money accordingly into core funds specifically for the income component, and we are, you know, able to use these money. We can shift these monies incrementally as needed. During a downturn where you would think that you would have redemption queues, we are satisfied, having experienced the deepest downturn, I think, in real estate history for a while, that we are still able to get some incremental measure of stable returns through the income component in our core funds.
And Cathy, talk to me about the kind of growth of some of the funds for the open-ended funds. Have you seen a really good strong growth in terms of open-ended? Are you seeing more in separate accounts? How are investors accessing core real estate in the U.S.?
We've seen tremendous growth in the open-end funds market. And I think there have been a lot of mandates given out for separate accounts as well, but clearly it's much more easily measured when you look at, you know, sort of the Odyssey universe. You know, there have been, I think, probably 13 or 14 new entrants or about to be entrants in the Odyssey, you know, since the first kind of stable group began, and then there was not much addition for a while, and now there's been a tremendous amount of new participants in the Odyssey. And so what that tells you is that there's a lot of demand for the product. I think it's a product that a lot of managers like to run. You know, it's very stable, and it really kind of gives you entree into larger markets and larger type products and international investors. So clearly there's been a lot of growth, which is still evident in the entry queues that exist in a lot of the large funds, and in the fact that there just continue to be not just people increasing their allocations, but also people who are new to the space or maybe new to U.S. core funds, or new to real estate in general. Because often what I've seen is that when an investor is making its first real estate investment, either in the U.S. or in general, the open-end core fund space tends to be kind of the training wheels of larger, you know, or broader real estate investing. It's if you want to kind of achieve instant diversification and you want to watch the market a little bit and learn a bit, that tends to be where people go first.
Right. And I will also say that an important component of that is the mindset behind larger investors in this space, many of whom are led by presumably a CIO with no real estate background. So they tend to be, you know, if you look at the overall, we're all asset allocators. And when you look at the overall asset allocation of many large pension funds, real estate is just a sliver. It's a small component, 7 to 10%, perhaps as much as 15 in some areas. Much of that portfolio is still public. So the whether it be fixed income or public equity. So the public markets mentality suits your whoever CIO or whoever's leading the charge on the asset allocation. So the core, you know, to the extent that there's some liquidity in open-ended core funds, that tends to be more favorable.
Sean, I want to bring you in here. You actually think REITs could be a structure that investors take hold of in terms of accessing kind of U.S. core real estate. How does it work? You know, what would you recommend?
We do think REITs have a place in the discussion of core real estate. You know, when we think about core real estate, what we're really thinking about is the underlying asset, the buildings that folks own. And then we layer on top of that the structure through which you can access those buildings. And so we think about core real estate as a long-term investment as well. So it's not something that is a liquid asset that you can buy and sell every quarter, every year. We think about the hold period of having a much longer duration. So when you put those two together, REITs own the same type of properties that you own in your core fund, and a long duration holder, when you start to look at those two things together over 5-7 year time periods, 5 to 7 year returns for REITs and core real estate are highly correlated. You know, in the short run, REITs do look like small cap stocks, or they very much are volatile and correlated to equities. However, if you extend that hold period to that 5 years, 7 years, they actually decouple from equities, and they look very much like just regular old core real estate, which makes sense. Because when a REIT sells a building, if you own the building next door, the price that building sold at is going to ripple through your evaluation, you know, whenever that comes back up again, will impact your pricing. And so we think they are very much linked together.
I think a really important point to note, too, is that a lot of the most coveted assets in the Odyssey are 50% owned by REITs, right, or more. And so, you know, because they're a venture with an Odyssey fund. Mm-hmm. So if you think about that, there's a lot more crossover at the, you know, fundamental real estate level than people think about.
No question about that. No question. The question, though, is are the REITs who are performing as core Odyssey players are they actually being rewarded for their good efforts? And our own experience and observations, at least short term, has been that by and large, REITs will correlate as much. It's a hybrid. It correlates as much with public equities.
The REIT market cap has grown significantly. And so they're very different today. And some, you know, REITs have been forced to focus in particular areas. So if you want New York office exposure, there are REITs that focus in that. If you want suburban office, there are REITs that focus in that. And they trade at different multiples. They trade at different yields. And those REITs that have bad structures, you know, for some of the laggards that are still externally managed, if you look at the valuations that those externally managed REITs trade at, which there are very few of them left today, they pay a penalty for doing that because the market hates the corporate governance and that works through the share price. So I definitely think there are REITs that are good REITs and bad REITs, and the market recognizes that.
Are they truly liquid? in your experience?
Our experience has not been the case, and perhaps it has to do with the actual REIT. We had investments in a private equity fund that REITed, and it took 3 years for that particular hotel REIT to to find its bearings and be in the money again. And then it still took me another 6 weeks to sell $3.5 million shares. Because the particular REIT was only trading 450,000 shares a day. So it wasn't quite as liquid as I had been led to believe.
Yeah. I think other reasons why I would say that REITs have a place is some of the properties that have core-like cash flow properties that REITs offer access to, you can't get largely in Odyssey funds. You mentioned malls earlier.
Right.
If you want fortress malls, mm-hmm. you kind of have to go to the REIT market. And if you are an owner of one fortress mall, you actually are probably just operating at a disadvantage relative to, say, a Simon.
Exactly.
That when they go negotiate their leases with Banana Republic, if you own a whole suite of malls, you probably have a lot more leverage than the single mall owner. You get outside of the core four food groups, that's half of the REIT market cap. There's another whole half of the REIT market cap that are a variety of asset types that you really can't get a lot of exposure to if you wanted it through just straight core funds.
Are we seeing much innovation in terms of structures?
I think the real innovation that I see in our space is more on the retail side, mm-hmm. So not institutional real estate necessarily, but I think retail is going to be the wave of the future. And I think a lot of the broker-dealers, et cetera, out there are trying to figure out, high net worth distributors or aggregators are trying to figure out how to get direct real estate into their clients' investment portfolios. And when you think about the shift in this country from defined benefit to defined contribution, if you think ahead 10, 15 years, it's not hard to see a real growth, in the retail market. And so all the structures that need to be, created or modified in order to enable that, like some of the changes happening with the private REIT market and trying to make that more transparent, which really mostly caters, I think, to the retail investors.
Would that be considered core, though?
You can have a core strategy, right, for a retail investor. Mm-hmm. So again, how do you access direct real estate in one of those? You have to be a pretty large strategy, mm-hmm. or fund of funds, which I think the fund of funds are probably going to be, a little bit more, prevalent in that space. And then, outside of the U.S., interesting new fund structures, not so much new, but becoming more popular, like UCITS, et cetera, I think are kind of the innovations that I'm seeing.
And Sean, what innovations are you really seeing in the market?
Yeah, I would echo a lot of what you said, specifically regarding DC plans. I think most every large open-end core manager out there is thinking about some way to build a daily value, daily liquidity option that can attract DC plans. So there are a few that have gotten off the ground and have AUM. I think the vast majority of others are thinking about how to do that. And I think that's also trying to blend into more opportunistic strategies, looking forward 10 to 15 years and think about how people are saving for retirement. That is certainly shifting. And so if you're running a large opportunity fund, you're probably trying to think about ways that you might be able to access some of that capital. Other things that I think a lot of our institutional clients are thinking about is just the fee element. Mm-hmm. How to change structures to make the fees a little bit more attractive.